I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. After Freddie Gray's death a year ago, the turmoil that followed focused attention on the lack of opportunities for young people in Baltimore. Under a national spotlight, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake added $4.2 million to the budget for after-school programs. The money paid for nearly 2,500 new spots for kids, mostly in underserved areas, including Sandtown Winchester, the neighborhood where Freddie Gray lived. Now it's time to write next year's budget. The city began the process with a major shortfall in revenue, and the mayor intends to cut last year's infusion and after-school funding to help make up part of the difference. What would this mean for young people? The battle over after-school dollars. That's Midday, after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm very glad you could be with us. Today we're talking about Baltimore's kids, particularly those who live in neighborhoods of poverty and other challenges. We're talking about the future of after-school programs, but it's a conversation tightly tied to what happened in the past. The turmoil in Baltimore a year ago after the death of Freddie Gray from a spinal cord injury while in police custody. You remember, the public discussion was not just about policing. Youth advocates blamed the violence last spring in part on a lack of safe places for young people to go after school. In response, last summer, the city pumped an extra $4.2 million into after-school programs and related services for young people. Here's Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake talking to WJZ after a press conference last June.
This additional support will help to make sure that more of our young people have the opportunities that we know that they need in the critical periods outside of school.
Youth advocates applauded that investment, but now it's budget time again, and this year the stars may not be aligned for after-school supporters. Facing a $60 million shortfall in revenues, the mayor has put last year's infusion of after-school funding on the chopping block. Officials from the mayor's office now say the $4.2 million bump was a, quote, one-time boost, close quote. The city council must review the budget package. The deadline to approve it is June 30th. It's unclear what will happen in the city's the budget's current state. The city council is unanimously calling on the mayor to restore those after-school funds. Here's a clip from WMAR of Councilman Bill Henry, District 4, at a protest outside the city hall last month.
And after the uprising, we got that money. But I will tell you this, my fear was not another uprising. My fear was that we wouldn't learn any lessons from it.
That's right.
My fear was that we would go and go back to business at normal, and this budget is a sign of that.
Councilman Bill Henry. Later in the hour, we'll hear from several organizations potentially affected by these cuts. But first, Howard Libet, Director of Strategic Planning and Policy for the Baltimore Mayor's Office, joins us by cell phone. Welcome to Midday.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
I'm glad you could join us. Here with us in the studio is Ellie Mitchell, director of the Maryland Out of School Time Network, a nonprofit youth development organization that works to improve after-school opportunities. Thanks for being here, Ellie.
Thank you for having me.
So, Howard Libet, let me start with last year's infusion of $4.2 million. Where did that come from, that money? Because it had not originally been in the budget.
So the money had been, and I apologize for that. I'm over at Hopkins right now. I stepped out to talk to you. The money was one-time money. We had actually set aside $10 million last year for the schools as an inducement for the schools to try and make some benefit cuts to bring their benefits more in line with what other city and state employees have. That didn't work out, so we had some extra one-time money available. And so we were able to afford to put that into the after-school funding. This year, we again sought to use that $10 million for the city, for the city schools, and that money has gone there to help make up for the GOAT students, the undercounting, or the overcounting that the school system had apparently been doing for several years.
And
money was instead put to the schools, and so the city has put $10 million additional into the city schools above and beyond what is required by state law. Which is twice the amount, more than twice the amount that we had put in as a one-time infusion of money to the after-school programs. You know, tough choices have to be made. We don't have an unlimited supply of money. And this year, the decision was made that the city schools, given the huge financial issues they were facing, needed those dollars.
So you're saying it basically comes down to a trade-off between the city investing money in the schools and continuing to invest this $4.2 million in
We have not touched the $6.2 million or so in annual funding, base funding for after-school programs. That money remains, but we were not able to sustain the one-time boost in surplus dollars that we were able to put in last year.
Let me pull Ellie Mitchell into this conversation. Ellie Mitchell with the Maryland Out of School Time Network. Why should after-school priorities be prioritized over other kinds of obligations that the city has? The budget has to be balanced.
I understand that they have to make tough decisions and that there's a set amount of money. I would say that our budget priorities reflect our city priorities. Over the last, during the Rawlings-Blake administration, the percentage of the overall budget that has been invested in policing has gone up and up. The percentage of the overall investment that is reflected in youth-related kinds of investments outside of the city school budget has not increased. In fact, we've been sitting at that $6 million investment for the last decade. And when Mayor Rawlings-Blake campaigned to become mayor, she said, yes, I'm going to double that investment in after school, which was about $4 million $4 million for after school and about a little over around $2 million for community schools.
So let me make sure I have these numbers straight before I go back to Howard Libet with a question. When Mayor Rawlings-Blake became mayor, it was the city funding for after school programs was around $4 million.
When you add community schools into it, the total pot is around $6 million. That's an aligned strategy in Baltimore now. So community schools and out of school time are connected. And actually, this $4.2 million that was added provided a new opportunity for community-based programs that weren't necessarily part of community schools initiatives to get funding to do programs that were really serving kids where they are.
Yeah, take just a minute to tell us briefly what the $4.2 million produced in the last year.
Sure. So six new community schools, programming impacting about 2,500 students across the city. And as I mentioned, smaller community-based organizations that really do that grassroots work, that really reach kids, and some of the hardest-to-reach kids in Baltimore City were for the first time eligible for city funding through this 4.2. And it really expanded our services to older youth, impacted by foster care, youth impacted by a juvenile justice system, refugee and immigrant youth. Those kinds of services were expanded with this $4.2 million.
Howard Libet of the mayor's office, Ellie Mitchell raised the point that when Stephanie Rawlings-Blake was campaigning for mayor in 2011, her full term as mayor, she promised to double the funding for after school programs to about $8.5 million, and last year's bump essentially brought the city budget to that point, and now it would drop back again. What about her 2011 campaign promise?
We remained at about $6.2 million base funding. And I would disagree with a point Ellie made about funding for youth not increasing under the Rawlings-Blake administration. I mean, just since fiscal year, I mean, right now the city's will be spending about $372 million in the current fiscal year on services for children and youth. That's an increase of $14 million over fiscal year 2015, or about 4%.
But
it has been going up. I understand that for the niche of after school funding, it is not this year. It will be less than what we were able to spend in the current. This next year, the budget would propose spending less than in the current fiscal year, and it was a tough choice. It was a tough trade off.
But what I asked you about specifically was her 2011 campaign promise to bring it up to above $8 million,
and it fell back. And it's now back down to 6.2 under the current budget. It is less than what, in response to a question in a forum, she had said she would try to do. Absolutely. And it's an unfortunate choice, but the budget, you know, has tough trade-offs. None of us were expecting prescription drug costs to go up as rapidly as they have, or pension costs, or or to be struggling with some of the, you know, continuing aftermaths of the recession.
That is Howard Libbitt, spokesman for Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, Director of Strategic Planning and Policy in the Mayor's Office here on Midday on WYPR. And with me here in the studio is Ellie Mitchell, Director of the Maryland Out of School Time Network, a nonprofit. But I want to also pick up on Ellie's broader picture, pulling out from the specific numbers of millions, the idea that the city's budget reflects its priorities. And how does the mayor address whether or not she is addressing after-school services for young people as a high enough priority?
I think the mayor has prioritized it like a bunch, like many other priorities. There isn't unlimited funding. I think there's been a recognition that the needs this year of the city school system for these unencumbered funds was greater, given the huge cuts they faced following the discovery of enrollment figure problems. So that $10 million additional dollars we had for youth, the decision was made it had to go to the city schools. And quite frankly, the governor and the legislature helped make that decision with some of their actions on the state budget.
Ellie Mitchell wants to jump in on that.
Yeah, so I don't think it was the intent of the legislature when they negotiated the additional 12 plus million that the governor put in, with the kind of understanding that the city would come up with 10
to match it.
That they would then indeed also cut other services to children's programming. And actually, there is still also a $2.8 million cut that is not part of the maintenance of effort budget, but part of the contribution the city makes to other city school services. That makes that total investment of $10 million not actually $10 million, but $7.2 net for the city school system.
Okay, we're going to get lost in the numbers, because I'm not actually going to take time right now to ask you to explain maintenance of effort.
No, but I'd love to explain where that $2.8 million came from. 20 years ago, when the city school system separated from the city, there was an agreement made that for 20 years, the city would make a $2.8 million annual payment to the schools to help cover the cost of severance payments to city school employees who left the school system. So in other words, to help cover the cost of their unused vacation, unused sick time, et cetera. That 20-year agreement expired.
And so that meant that $2.8 million, it was sort of sitting loose?
Is no longer part of the payment system, because the city school system has now taken over those costs.
So I'm sorry, Howard, I'm not sure I'm following the point that you're making.
The $2.8 million is not a cut. There was an agreement made that for 20 years, the city would make this payment. That agreement expired.
Okay, but what I'm trying to understand, it sounds to me as if you just underscored Ellie's point that therefore that was a $2.8 million obligation the city no longer has.
That the city no longer has, so the city is not making that payment any further. I'm just trying to explain where the money comes from. It's not some willy-nilly cut. There was a negotiated agreement 20 years ago when the separation happened, that there's an explanation for that money. It's not a flat-out cut. It's that an agreement expired.
Howard Libbitt, I know I'm going to lose you in a couple of minutes, and there's something else that I do want to raise, and that is, as you know, in February, for the first time in more than 30 years, the city council voted to override a veto of a mayor. Voters, because of that override, voters will decide on the November ballot whether the city should set aside a specific amount of money, 3% of revenues, for youth programs. Does this charter amendment proposal have any bearing on the decision to cut after-school funding?
It did not have any bearing on the decision not to sustain the surplus funding. Quite frankly, it's not. I mean, the mayor thinks this is irresponsible fiscal policy, but it's not going to be her issue to fix. When the fiscal year 2018 budget has to be done, if voters approve this charter amendment, then an additional 3% above and beyond what we're currently spending will have to go to youth, and it will be up to the next mayor and the next city council to figure out what other services to cut to make that work, or taxes to raise, or however else they want to free up those dollars.
Well, I raise it in particular because, as you know, there has been speculation that the mayor's decision to take out the $4.2 million from after-school funding is in retaliation for that veto.
Absolutely not. Look, the suggestion was even made to us, you know, why don't you just cut way back on youth funding for a year, and that'll make it easier to implement the charter amendment the following year. And the mayor had no intention of doing that. The mayor has no intent. The mayor understands the priorities of youth, but has to look at it within the context of the many complicated budget issues that we're facing, and the fact that we went into this budget year with a $60 million gap between projected expenses and revenues. There's, you know, advocates have been calling on us for years to make deeper cuts to police. This budget does that to free up money. Is it enough? It's not enough. The mayor would love to fund additional things. And quite frankly, who knows what will happen in the negotiating process? Remember, this initial budget is a starting point. The council every year negotiates and changes come about, whether it's last year where they saved the circulator, some elements of the circulator, or as well as the council negotiating for the extra money, one-time money for after-school funds. This is all part of a process.
Part of a process that will unfold over the next, 6 weeks or so. So I appreciate your taking time to talk to us about it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Ellie.
Howard Libet is Director of Strategic Planning and Policy for the Baltimore Mayor's Office. He has to leave us now. We're going to take a quick break and then talk more, a lot more questions about after-school opportunities for children and teens in Baltimore neighborhoods. You are welcome to join the conversation. Do you pay taxes in Baltimore? Does it make sense to you that something has to be cut if revenues are down? What would you cut? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake's decision to cut last year's $4.2 million boost in after-school and community school funding and what the implications of that might be. Ellie Mitchell, director of the Maryland Out-of-School Time Network, is here in the studio with me. And joining us now is Carol Reckling, executive director of Child First Authority, a Baltimore nonprofit that provides services during the school day as well as after hours. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you for joining us. Before we jump in, and I should remind our listeners that you are welcome also to be part of this conversation. We're taking calls at 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. And someone who has called us, Carol, before I ask you any questions, I want to take this caller. Councilman Bill Henry is calling us. Welcome to Midday.
Well, thank you, Sheila. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good, although I continue to be disappointed in the administration's lack of recognition of the importance of these kind of activities.
Well, but let me ask you the issue that I was discussing with the mayor's spokesman, where should the money come from, given the pressures on the budget? I mean, you as a city council person will have to vote on this budget. Where would you find $4.2 million?
Well, first of all, I was intrigued by Howard's statement that in response to advocates, they've made deeper cuts into the police. This year's budget it includes a $31 million increase on police spending. We will now be spending $475 million on the police department. That's a number that's easier rounded up to $500 million. And to put it into a little bit of historical perspective, 25 years ago, we were spending a third of that. Over the last 25 years, the city budget has about doubled. The police department's budget has about tripled. And we are proposed to spend in fiscal 17 $3 million less on recreation and parks than we spent in 1990.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying there is more money to be saved in the police budget.
What I'm saying is that for a generation now, we've been disproportionately allocating our resources trying to deter and catch criminals while investing less and less in the program most likely to keep our kids from becoming criminals in the first place. And that's just ridiculous.
I appreciate your sharing your point of view, Councilman Henry. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
Carol Reckling, tell me how the work of the Child First Authority relates to this potential budget cut.
I'll take you back to the citywide election going back to 1996. I came at this work through BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, a coalition of congregations in the city. In preparation for a citywide election, we talked to about 2,500 residents to find out what they thought should be an agenda for the next person running for mayor. I don't care where you went in this community, the issue of youth opportunity was there. If you recall back in that time, there was a crack epidemic, we were testing and schools weren't achieving, and people were looking at kids and saying, what's wrong with our kids? They're a problem. And then they'd say, no, they're not a problem. They don't have opportunity. So imagine having this fight that long. That's how long we've been having this fight. When the mayor ran for office, going back in 2011, she promised that she would double funding for after-school programs. Now, that one-time, so-called one-time funding was supposedly her living up to her promise. And I think you announced it when you opened the show, the terms you used were perfect. And that was under a national spotlight. Now, our concern is that the need has not changed. Because if anyone recalls, there's been a lot, you all have done a lot of programming this week on what happened a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
What stunned me a year ago is when all of the national cameras were here, when they interviewed youth on TV, national TV, I felt like I had prepped those youth to say what they said. But in fact, they were speaking from their heart and what they know of their lives. And what they said is that we need opportunity. And they named, we need after school programs. We need recreation programs. The youth said that. That was, as if the adults didn't already know it. And we did. That's why we've been advocating all these many years. The youth themselves said it. And it took all of that and the national spotlight for the mayor to finally to double the funding, which she had promised to do 4 years earlier and had, just backpedaled on that promise.
Let's hear from Jennifer, who is calling us from Baltimore. Jennifer, welcome to Midday.
Thank you, Sheila. I wanted to talk about the after-school programming, and I wish we didn't have to cut one thing to move money to another thing because, I think that the schools and education itself is very important. I don't want to cut education in order to fund after-school programming. And I don't want to say anything more about the whole budget process. The city council and the mayor will figure it out. But I think that, for real parents and real schools that have to figure out what to do with less funding, I think they need to think out of the box a little bit and think about after-school programming that's less expensive than, full adults doing homework assistance for kids. For instance, if you have Girl Scouts at your school, the Girl Scouts of America will provide leaders, sports leagues in the city. We need more of those. A lot of times it doesn't require as many adults to run that sort of thing as to run a homework program in a school. And these are the sorts of things I think that the schools are going to have to turn to find places for their students to go after school.
Jennifer, I appreciate the call.
This is a problem that we have. When I used to say early on that we did after school, people would say, oh, that's nice. And I would tell people, I don't do nice. This is critical work that we're doing. It's not nice work. It's, schools are already doing things out of the box. Yes, Girl Scouts can come in. We partner with Girl Scouts. They come into the after school programs and as a part of the enrichment. Now, homework help? Maybe. Academic enrichment? Absolutely. So we're able to address student learning in collaboration with what's happened in the day school? How can we do this differently in after school so that students achieve? Also, attendance. I met with a principal this morning who said we're looking at a cut to her school. She says, do you understand? No one understands. She says, what this does for parents, number one, enabling them to work without the added expense of childcare. And I never talk about the childcare, but I know it's a reality. Okay, she said, do you understand that I have special needs children whose parents were saying to me, I want my kids to be able to at least socialize and have other activities with students who aren't all the time in special needs classes, because some of these kids are in contained classes. And she says, finally, my children get an opportunity to do have music instruction.
Let me make sure I understand. So this parent told you that because of after-school program, because of expanded after-school programming, her special needs child is able to have a different kind of experience than they're having during the school day. But the question that Jennifer raised, though, I think comes down to, is there any way to stretch the dollars that will remain further? And Ellie is shaking her head at me. Ellie Mitchell.
We've been staying at the same reimbursement rates for after school for the last decade. So assuming that there's no cost of living increase that to staff and to all these other things, we've already stretched these dollars as far as we can and leveraged ton of money. And the more investment the city puts in, the more leverage we can get from state and federal and other places to serve more kids. What we need is a citywide systemic effort to address the fact that 80% of a child's life is spent outside of the school day. 80% of our investment is not in that place. And some people will say, well, that's the family's responsibility. That's the parent's responsibility. And we say, yes, there's a piece of that, and parent engagement is a huge part of after school. But there is no way for working parents to cover that space that is not covered by the school day. And there's so many needs that after school and the community schools initiatives address, particularly in our city that has such high concentrated poverty, that this is a strategy that works and has a return on investment. So thinking about how we pull back is really short-sighted.
And in addition to that, Girl Scouts and sports leagues have costs as well. So it's not like they're doing it for free. They also have costs and expenses.
Daniel has called us from Timonium. Daniel, welcome to Midday.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I absolutely agree that funding for after-school programs is essential, but what I was thinking is not essential is the amount of funding that the city pours into subsidies for developers, particularly the Under Armour Center south of the harbor, and as well as, like, these big civic events that seem kind of misguided, Light City, the Grand Prix, over the past few years. And I think that could free up, like, huge amounts of money for improving, you know, East and West Baltimore and the lives of children in the city.
Daniel, I appreciate the suggestion. I'm assuming that you agree with Daniel that you
Well, especially when you talk about what's happening with school funding. You know, the whole idea of the TIFs and pilots that took away funding that would have been that raised the wealth of the so-called wealth of the city and then took away funding for schools from state funding from the schools. We knew this was going to happen. We warned, Build warned that this was going to happen 6 years ago, that if you continue to give TIFs and pilots, you take funding away from children. So to say now, oh, we have to give money back to the schools because of this. No, you have to give money back out of the city budget because you gave away funding to developers. And to give $500 million TIF to Port Covington with no what are we getting in return? There's been no conversation about what we get in return. We've seen before that there have been promises of jobs. Bill has seen this over many years, and then the jobs go to other people who don't reside in the city. So this is not. There's a lot going on here that people need to wake up to.
And I think Tiffany has a point relevant to that. Tiffany is calling us from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday.
Yes. Hello.
Hello, Tiffany.
Hi, yes, good afternoon, ladies. So I know we need to hold our elected officials accountable for what they say they're going to do and for the best of our city. I also wonder, in addition to that, and in the meantime, what are some things that we are doing or that we can be doing in terms of partners, in terms of parents, and creating a system where we can fund these after-school programs and community school programs? What can we be doing if we know that elected officials are up one day and down one day? What can we have in place that is sustainable?
Let me ask Ellie Mitchell to address your question, Tiffany.
Sure. So, I mean, I think that what we want is a, as you said, a sustainable system for after-school and summer programs. One way is to get involved in some of the coordinating committees that are happening around the city, and I would suggest contacting the Family League of Baltimore City to find out more about how we're building a system of this.
Let me just interrupt to say the Family League of Baltimore City actually administers with the public funds. It administers
the
these
community
programs.
Schools, funding for community schools and after school.
Right. And we did ask them to take part and they declined to be part of this conversation. So it will be up to the Family League to decide if this cut happens.
No,
what it looks
up
like.
To the mayor. No, the mayor will decide the cut happens.
Right.
Oh, you said if it
if
happens,
this cut
what it looks
happens,
like. Absolutely.
How it mm-hmm. exactly yeah, what yeah. gets cut will yeah. be up to the Family League.
Yeah.
Correct. So I interrupted you, Ellie. You were
also,
saying
get involved in your local organizing. Carol mentioned Build. Most is part of the Baltimore Education Coalition, and these are organizations that have been working on these topics for a long time and bring people together around these conversations. Communities United has also been involved in this work, this advocacy work. And so, I think we have to have public, private, and business investment.
Yes.
And that's, to the question about, the TIFs and the pilots. You know, in other cities, one of the ways that citywide strategies have been funded is through significant investment from the business community. When there's a big development project, put some of the money aside for educational purposes.
And let me just say one other thing is that Build has already gotten a public commitment from the six mayoral candidates that if elected, they will double funding for after school over their next term. And that means double from what it should be right now or what it is right now in the current budget. They've already made that promise, that commitment. And the commitment, following up to the mayor's commitment on which she has reneged over and over again, that's recognition of the importance of programming for youth that is positive, that's developing them, keeping them in school and helping them to move forward and graduate.
Right, although I would point out that sounds parallel to the campaign promise that Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake made, which Libet said it's too bad that she just hasn't been able to keep it, and that seems
to be... Well, she's been able to. She has been unwilling to, I would say.
I was quoting Harry Libet. We need to take another quick break here, and we're going to keep talking about these issues when we come back with Carol Reckling, Executive Director of Child First Authority, and Ellie Mitchell, Director of the Maryland Out of School Time Network, and we'll learn about what's at stake for another outfit that teaches computer coding to kids. You can be part of this conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or call us at 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cass. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the future of after-school programs in Baltimore. After the unrest last spring, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake nearly doubled the budget for after-school programming from about $6 million to about $10 million. Now, as the mayor writes next year's budget, she's pulling that $4 million infusion out again. Does it strike you as fiscal responsibility or does it strike you as penny wise and pound foolish? You can join our conversation by sending an email to midday@wypr.org or phoning us 410-662-8780. I'm here with Ellie Mitchell, Director of the Maryland Out of School Time Network, and Carol Reckling, Executive Director of the nonprofit Child First Authority. And before we move on, there's a phrase you both have been using that I'm not sure everybody knows, myself included. A community school is not just a school in a community.
No.
What it seems to be a term of art here. What does community school mean?
In Baltimore City, there are 60 or 61 community schools. And each community school has a lead agency. Child First is the lead agency for 7 community schools. And each community school has a full-time community school coordinator whose role is to work with the school to develop a needs assessment and cover areas such as attendance, family engagement, youth development, and
health, mental health.
Health and mental health. So if you can imagine, there are a lot of issues that students and families face that affect student achievement. Our community school coordinators have been organizing partners. When you talk about doing more with less, they've been organizing partnerships and partners and services that address specific needs that they know of in a school. So, for example, we have schools that now have more partners delivering mental health services.
Because there were the infusion of funding made six schools community schools.
Exactly. So covering a position for a full-time person to be there.
So there are now how many community schools?
We think it's either 60 or 61. The numbers depend on.
And that would drop back, presumably, if this cut is
definitely
made. It would drop back to 55 or something like that. Okay, so that's community schools. And the other thing we haven't talked about is part of this, is it true of all community schools that kids get fed, that there's a meal attached to it?
Oh, my God, yes.
And so if this cut is made, does that affect any other funding that comes to?
Absolutely. So
this is Ellie Mitchell.
All of the programs, after-school programs, serve meals through the federal after-school meals program. That is all money that comes into Baltimore City through federal dollars. It's reimbursed, and it creates jobs because there are companies that are serving these meals. And most importantly, it feeds kids. And $4.2 million means lots more kids being fed and lots more of those federal dollars coming into the city. So when that goes, so does the federal funding that comes to serve and feed those kids.
And do you know how much federal funding we're talking about?
It's millions of dollars. So
the same order of magnitude as the city's investment in these after school.
Think about feeding thousands of kids per day and what that would cost. And the federal government pays for that. And so the other point on this is that so you lose the federal funding, you lose the kids being fed. Community schools, when the snowstorms came, they were the places where kids were being fed. They were staying open.
As well as last April.
Because the schools were closed because of the snow.
And when schools were closing last April, when the uprising happened, community schools were also a place where children could go and meals were being served there as well.
I want to pull somebody else into this conversation. Gretchen LeGrand has joined us. She's executive director of an organization called Code in the Schools. Code in the Schools provides computer programming classes for underserved kids in the city. Gretchen LeGrand, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell me more about Code in the Schools. What does it do?
We're a nonprofit. We do computer science education all throughout Baltimore City. So we have a few different programs. We do in-school computer science enrichment and teach high school computer science classes. And then we have summer programming and then this after-school component as well.
So, and how long have you been around?
For 3 years.
Okay. And you got some of this infusion, this $4.2 million infusion we've been talking about?
We did. Because of the money that the mayor released last year, we were able to get new funding through the Family League for our after-school programs specifically.
And what did that mean? How did that new funding show up?
Sure. So we serve a lot of kids each year, but the bulk of the kids that we serve are in school because of our contracts with the various schools that we work with. After school is definitely the hardest to fund. So we were able to more than double the number of spots that we had for our kids in after school programs because of that funding.
And that meant what? How many kids and what were you able to do that you otherwise wouldn't or that you think you might not be able to do if this cut goes through?
Sure. So we have 200 open. We have 200 spots that are filled right now in after school. 120 of those are through the Family League funding that we got. So those will all go away if we lose the funding.
Is that what you're expecting?
Are we expecting to lose the funding?
Well, no.
I'm hoping for the best.
I guess, Ellie, this is, you have an overview of all about of school time programming. I mean, is it likely if the $4.2 million that was added last year gets subtracted again, is it likely that the extra slots that Gretchen just told us about will disappear?
I think it's going to be complicated, and I think that's going to end up also causing challenges, is that they're going to have to look at this pool of funded programs, the ones that have been funded for years through the 6.2 and the new ones, and decide who doesn't get the dollars. We can't imagine that there's going to be any huge knight in shining armor. We got a little bit of money from the state, and we're not sure how that's going to work. So, yes, I mean, I think it is realistic for Gretchen to believe that if the city does not come through with this 4.2, that she will not be funded for those 120 slots.
Ellie, what percentage of the demand is being met now?
Sure. So right now in Baltimore City, about 16% of young people, school-age young people, have access to some kind of after-school program. And we can't even tell you what that means by, is it a great after-school program? Is it every day? Is it just, that's just us counting seats in every program in Baltimore City. And our estimate is that really to get to scale, we'd be serving more like 45%. Just as a comparison, our friends down in D.C. are serving 35% of students in after-school programs. So it really takes a citywide vision and effort to implement that.
Eleanor is calling us from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you. I just wanted to acknowledge the good work that Ellie does with most, and a lesson that I actually learned from her at a meeting that I had a while ago was a concept called the activity gap, and the lasting impact of not having constructive, productive after-school activities for kids. It'll be years and years, because the kids that are not getting those activities are being put in a world where there are many other kids that have parents who can afford to pay for piano lessons and lacrosse lessons and baseball leagues, and it's a part of their development. And are the kids in Baltimore City who do not get that and don't have access to those programs will be at a huge disadvantage for the rest of their lives. So this cut of funding will have a tremendous impact for years to come on Baltimore City.
Eleanor, I appreciate the call. Brenda is calling from Baltimore. Brenda, your point?
Yes, I don't think the people who hold the purse strings realize the emotional impact of children unable to concentrate because of their home life or just their community life is basically destroyed. And they need somewhere to feel safe so they can concentrate in school on other things other than what's life going to be like after I leave home and go home. And this Covington thing built on the bay, I thought we were all trying to be environmentalists and save the bay. What is this about? What is it for?
Brenda, I appreciate the call. I'm having a little trouble picking up your voice. Your connection is breaking up a little bit. But let me take your question to our guests. In a way, I could hear what Brenda say and think, okay, we really need to double down on school funding. And the Howard Libet, the mayor's spokesman, sort of told us that was the trade-off, that the mayor decided to put more money into schools at the urging of the state, and that meant not continuing the funding for after school.
The actual trade-off was the TIFs and pilots that were given to developers. That's the trade-off that's been made for our children in Baltimore City. I'm sorry. They've been sold so that we could have shiny downtown.
Mara is calling us from Baltimore with a point, I think, about the state's funding effort. Mara, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to mention a couple things that I think...
We're tight on time, so why don't you focus on one point in particular?
Okay, first of all, the governor is still sitting on geographic cost of index funding for Baltimore City, $13 million. That was appropriated last year that he's still holding that can't be spent on anything else. That would be an enormous help to city schools. Second, there's a line item, the Maryland After School Opportunity Fund, that hasn't been funded for a number of years through the state budget. That would also be a huge help. So in addition to local funding, we're also being shortchanged in Baltimore City in terms of state funding.
Mara, you obviously know your numbers very well. I appreciate your putting them on the table. Ellie, you want to respond to Mara's point?
So the Maryland After School Opportunity Fund was actually repealed as part of the passing of the Public Schools Opportunities Act this legislative session, which is $7.5 million, which can be used for after school, summer, community school, as well as teacher training and professional development. We have yet to see how much money Baltimore will actually get from that, although we will definitely benefit from it eventually. So that the state actually did step up. The intention, though, was not for the city to step back as the state stepped up. And Maggie and Bill, Maggie McIntosh and Bill Ferguson, wrote an op-ed just to that point.
Delegate Maggie McIntosh.
Correct.
And Senator Bill Ferguson. One of you, now I've forgotten who it is, made the point that the candidates for mayor have expressed commitment to doubling the funding level for after school programs or something close to it.
Exactly.
So in that sense, since a new mayor would be taking office halfway through this budget year that's coming, should we be, is it as big a problem as you have been painting it if this cut gets made? Can't you count on it being reversed?
I'm not sure about that. We could possibly have a new mayor, a new council. So there's going to be a lot.
Well, there's
going to
be a new mayor, and a big part of the council is going to be new.
So there's a lot of change. So we want to deal with the situation as it exists right now.
Children also have relationships with the people that are in these programs. And one of the problems we have in Baltimore is that funding goes up, funding goes down, programs go away. And the instability that creates in families and children's lives is unacceptable. And it is one of the reasons why it's actually kind of a re-victimization of people when they have trauma and have these things pulled out.
Let me ask, in the tiny bit of time we have left, Gretchen LeGrand, to tell us how that plays out with code.
Code in the schools.
Code in the schools. We talked about how it's quite likely that whatever you were able to add in after-school programming, 120 slots would go away. What does that mean, as you see it, for the stability in the lives of the kids you work with?
Sure. I think it's important to the stability in their lives, and also to address one of your caller's points. The activities that we're giving these kids are closing the gap that the kids in our city have, that the kids in the county and the kids who go to private schools don't have. And the more we can see them, the more year after year we can see them, the closer they get to closing that gap, and the closer they are to having the same achievement rates as the kids who are more affluent.
Well, this is obviously a big issue for the city that's going to, as Howard Libet pointed out, he seemed to almost be offering some kind of at least to talk about some kind of a compromise as the city council looks at this over the month of May and June. The final deadline for passing the budget is June 30th, and I want to thank each of you for helping us understand a little bit better. Gretchen LeGrand is executive director of Code in the Schools. Thanks
thank
for being
you.
Here.
Thanks for having me.
Ellie Mitchell, director of the Maryland Out of School Time Network. I'm glad you could be with us.
Thank you so much.
And Carol Reckling, executive director of the nonprofit Child First Authority. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch for our guest today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in Monday. Clergy in Sandtown are banding together to improve life in the neighborhood. We'll hear about their efforts. That's on Monday. I'm Sheila Cast. As Passover begins tonight, all of us at midday wish you prosperity and peace. Shalom.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at wypr.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.